The gospel reading this morning is from the Gospel of Mark. I hope that you've been getting used to spending time in the Gospel of Mark. We've done a lot since last Advent, and it's just starting to get good. So here we are in the 8th chapter, and these are verses 27 through 38. This is the section called Peter's Declaration About Jesus, followed by Jesus foretells his death and resurrection. Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they answered him, "John the Baptist, and others, Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." He asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." And Jesus sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. For you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." And then he called all the crowd with his disciples and said to all of them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." Here ends the reading of the gospel. These words speak the power of life, and they may be trusted. Amen. So we continue through a series of sermons and services where we're taking some time to concentrate on each of the phrases within our church's mission statement. You know, the statement that we say at the beginning of the service. So last week we started with, "We worship God." And today we continue with the phrase, "And share the love of Jesus Christ." It is part of our mission as a church to share the love of Jesus Christ. So we take a little bit of time to ponder what it might mean to share that love, and what kind of love it is that we call the love of Jesus Christ. In our text today, which is, I think, to many a familiar text, this question that gets asked, "Who do you say that I am?" we find Jesus and the disciples in a sort of confrontation around ideas. At this point in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus and the disciples have been traveling throughout the entire region of Galilee, going from village to village. And what kinds of things are they doing as they travel around? Do you know? Healing. Gathering people, gathering followers. Nice. Teaching. What's it? Feeding. Casting out demons. Talking about the kingdom. Walking on water, there are some signs, amazing signs of Jesus' power. In fact, in one of those water scenes, Jesus calls out, and it's the same word as the rebuke in our verse today, rebukes the wind and the sea, and there's a dead calm. And then the disciples ask themselves, who is this that even the wind and the sea are obeying him? In other words, the first part of the Gospel of Mark is a journey narrative in which Jesus is displaying the power of God that is in him, through him, and around all of his ministry. And then we arrive at chapter 8. And chapter 8 becomes, for the gospel, really a hinge point, a pivot, if you will. This is the place where the journey narrative around Galilee is about to end. And in this very moment, Jesus is about to direct his sights not north anymore, but south, and all the way to the great city of Jerusalem. And in this story, right here as we encounter it, there's kind of been a lot of talk about who might this Jesus be and what is he all about? And it's important to recognize where they are as they're having this conversation. Did you hear it in the first phrase? They are walking through the villages of Caesarea Philippi. Now, there are two Caesareas. There's Caesarea Maritima, which is on the coast, and Caesarea Philippi, which is just to the north, kind of on the way to Damascus, but not that far north. So just north of Galilee. And if you hear it, can you hear it in the name who these cities are dedicated to, Caesarea? Caesar. Right, so the name of the city is given to the great emperor, the great Augustus. And in Caesarea Maritima, there's this amazing port that was built in honor of Caesar. And in Caesarea Philippi, there is an entire temple. Imagine a gaudy temple of stone upon stone with some statue in it, all so that all of the people in the region can come and they can pay homage to Caesar. Caesar Augustus, the great Caesar, who also added to his title a Latin term, divius filiae, meaning son of the divine. Imagine if you were a ruler like Caesar, who was called the Augustus, the great one, and you knew that people thought so much of you and you thought so much of yourself that you could just add onto your title, son of the divine. And the whole Gospel of Mark is written to bring into conflict Caesar, son of the divine, and the very first verse in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus, son of God. So now, for the first half of Mark, they're traveling around Galilee, and finally they're going to the furthest reaches to the north, and Jesus is facing north, and he's walking through the villages of Caesarea Philippi, and he asks, hey, who are people saying that I am? Well, they say you're John the Baptist, reincarnated. They say you're Elijah, the great prophet that will come to usher in the new age. They're saying that you are one of the prophets. And Jesus says, who do you say that I am? And Peter said, oh, I got it. Pick me. You are the Messiah. And Peter is half right and half wrong. And that is why Jesus says, don't tell anyone about this. In fact, come in close. Let's huddle up. Let me tell you something. And then Jesus changes his title from Messiah, from Son of God to, did you hear it? Son of man or son of humanity. The divine one that is born on behalf of humanity. And Jesus says, I think you might have an idea of where this is all going, and I need to disabuse you of that idea. I am no longer headed north toward the temple of Caesarea Philippi in order to destroy it so that you can set up a new temple of Jesus of Nazareth. Instead, I am turning 180 degrees, and I am now heading south, and I'm going all the way to Jerusalem. And I'm going as an unarmed man. And I'm going as someone who embodies the love of God. And this is what's going to happen when I do that. I'm not going to turn back. And the authorities are going to be threatened. And they're going to kill me. But 3 days later, I will rise. And you're just going to have to trust me on this. And the disciples don't trust him on this. They resist. They argue. They ask, can't there be some other way? It seems that the disciples, just like us in our own culture, we are very often tempted to believe that the real way that things happen in the world is to get power and to use it to get your way. This happens politically and broadly in terms of global politics. It also happens in our individual lives and our relationships, even with the people that we are closest to. We think, if I can just make this happen, if I can just wield my power in such a way that I can get what I want, then everything will be okay. But this is not the path that Jesus chooses. There are a few theologians who talk about a deep alchemy or a deep physics, kind of underneath what you can see in the world. Have any of you read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? A good number of you. Do you remember what C.S. Lewis calls it? He calls it deep magic from the dawn of time. The deep magic from the dawn of time could also be called the myth of redemptive violence. The deep magic from the dawn of time is this magic that says the one that can find and grasp and wield enough power will be able to assert his or her will upon others. And if an act of violence is threatening, you just have to come up with a better or larger countervailing act of violence to overcome it. The Star Wars series of movies, as much as we love it, is exactly an instance of this myth of redemptive violence. That if the resistance can just find the right person and wield the spirituality of the force in just the right way and find the salvific figure who will be able to trust the force over anything, then he will be able to deliver the missile into just the right place to destroy the Death Star, and now everything will be better. But have you noticed there's another episode? There's always another episode. So what Jesus knew as he was teaching his disciples and the crowd was that there is not just a deep magic, a violence that seems to have been there from the beginning of time, from the dawn of time. There is, in fact, do you remember what C.S. Lewis calls it? A deeper magic from before the dawn of time. That deeper magic is suffering love. Suffering love, which refuses to counter violence with violence. It also refuses to do violence upon oneself or to look away while violence is being done to those who are vulnerable. But it does not seek simply to destroy the destroyer. It seeks to liberate from within. It seeks to help people recognize deep within them that there is a love that is beyond death. There is a love that is not just underneath all reality, but underneath even that, and which enfolds everything and all. I have a sense that everyone in this room has at one moment or another experienced that deeper magic from before the dawn of time. I don't know why it has to be this way, Jane, but it seems that it requires a certain crisis to open us up to this love. Sometimes, John, it is a it's a grief. It's a grief that we never would have chosen, but that has been handed to us. Sometimes, Pat, it's a weather disaster, like a storm slowly moving across the Carolinas, or fires moving through our own hills. Do you notice that in those moments of grief and of loss, of crisis and of disaster, there is a certain veil that falls? And what happens when that veil falls is all of the stuff that doesn't matter, doesn't matter. And suddenly you look around and you see the world in a certain way. And all of the other stuff that we spend a lot of time worrying about seems to just dissolve into our peripheral vision. I had an experience of this past week. I've debated whether to share with you this story because I'm in the midst of some grief myself. And I've decided, well, I'm just going to do it. My friend that I met in fifth grade when I was 10 died recently of colon cancer, 46 years old. His name was Pete Rinaldi, and he was a crazy guy. We had all kinds of stories about things that he had done while we were growing up. By no means a perfect person, just like the rest of us, imperfect, but so much life, and his personality was huge, and people showed up to his memorial service this past week in the evening, and there was a certain holiness in the room. In fact, at the very beginning of the service, this music started, and all of this chatter just kind of went down to silence. And I don't know if it was planned or not, but this music that was playing just played while this entire room of people just sat in that space without saying anything for about 5 minutes. And it was in that moment that I would say I felt that veil fall. And all of the stuff that I might have been worrying about 10 minutes ago, 60 minutes ago, it had just disappeared. And I looked around the room at all of these people, each with their own stories, each with their own imperfections. And I realized that all that matters right now is the people in this room doing what we're doing right now. And that feeling stayed with me throughout the service and throughout that evening and on my drive back. On my drive back up through Marin County and Sonoma County toward home, I had this experience of both grieving the loss of my friend, but also things that I thought had been important a week ago were no longer important. I stopped grasping onto them, and I just let them go. I think that might be a window into what we mean when we say, share the love of Jesus Christ, which is never ever a grasping, self-serving love, but is always a love of the open hand and of giving, of beholding what is, of letting go of what doesn't matter, allowing ourselves to not avoid suffering, but not seek it out for its own sake, but is willing to just face the truth and the reality of our own lives, the life of the church, the life of the world, without flinching, and to realize that this is the way that God sees the world all the time, even when we forget. So, church, to share the love of Jesus Christ, I just want you to experience something physically. I want you to make a couple of fists if you can. Grasp. This is all of the stuff that you think matters. And sometimes it does. But when we release it, you can release it with me, and we open our hands and we let go, we begin to give to others what we have glimpsed and named, a love that is greater than death itself. And this is the love that we are trying to cultivate in this community. And this is the love that we are trying to share with a world in need. Amen.